Welcome to Let's Talk Health, a community radio initiative of the Community Health and Social Services Network, or the CHSSN, funded by the McGill Training and Human Resources Development Project. Our show today is Grieving and Loss with grief counselor Dawn Cruchet. My name is Kelly Howarth, and I will be your host for this show. So I'd like to start by introducing Dawn Cruchet. Dawn has a Bachelor of Nursing and a Master's of Education. She is a certified grief educator and counselor. She has developed and coordinates the Growing Through Grief program for Mount Royal Commemorative Services and facilitates bereavement support groups, coordinates the biannual Good Grief Workshop for grieving children and adolescents, trains professionals in grief issues, and teaches demystifying death and dying in the educational faculty at McGill University. In 2002, Dawn co-founded the Grief Center at the Queen Elizabeth Health Complex, where she and her partner work with families dealing with loss by death and terminal illness. Dawn's website, for any of you interested, is www.dawncruchet.com. Hello, Dawn. Welcome, and thank you for being here with us today to talk about grieving and loss.
Hi, Kelly. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. What are some of the losses we encounter in our lives, Dawn?
Well, we encounter death-related losses, such as the loss of a relationship, you know, if a family breaks up, divorce, separation, pet loss, job loss, in terms of being downsized or being fired, retirement is a loss. When we move, we encounter losses. When a best friend moves away, this is a loss. And then there are the death-related losses, you know, that when somebody we love dies. And I find that it's never just one loss, but we also encounter secondary losses when one person dies or when we're experiencing a non-death-related loss. For example, when a person that we love dies, we also have to deal with the loss of the role that that person played in our lives, perhaps the loss of hopes and dreams if it was a spouse and retirement was looming and all of a sudden one of them dies and all those hopes and dreams for retirement have to be grieved. Perhaps people also experience loss of safety, security, financial means. All of these losses are secondary losses in addition, you know, to the primary loss.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the whole issue of loss is pretty huge.
So then, Dawn, what is grief?
Well, grief is the normal, healthy response to loss. It's a process and not an event. And I think grief is the most universal of all human experiences, as well as the most painful, and also the one that we're least prepared for, because where do we learn about it in our death-denying society? One of the most important things to learn about loss and grief, because grief is how we adjust to the loss, is that you don't, quote, get over grief. You never wake up one day and you're done, but you adjust. And I think you have to adjust from the physical presence of this person in your life to their physical absence to that place in your heart and soul for their memory. But it's a huge leap. And as we're talking, I mean, we did talk about the big umbrella of loss and non-death-related loss, but I work in the area of loss by death, and so what I'm going to be describing and talking about is how we adjust to loss by death. But the principles of that can be applied to any loss.
So in your work, you do grief work. Tell us what exactly is grief work.
Well, I like that term, grief work, because I find that it takes a lot of work and a lot of emotional energy to adjust to the loss of that person in your lives and the adjusting to the physical loss, the physical absence, and then that place in our heart and soul for their memories. And we have to do that by working through the loss. You see, you can't go over, under, around grief. You have to go through it. You have to experience the pain, as awful and as hard as it is. We have to go through it. And gradually, as we work it through, the feelings are not so intense, and we eventually find that place in our hearts and souls for the memories. But it takes a long time.
So how long does grief work take then?
Well, it takes as long as it takes. You know, I think that one of the things that we have to realize is that we have to go through all that whole first year of anniversary dates. And I've learned from the people in my bereavement support groups that every month, you know, a huge anniversary date looms. So it's the birthday of the person who died, the birthday of the people left behind, Mother's Day, Father's Day, Easter, Hanukkah, Passover, change of seasons, very difficult. The first holiday time is very difficult. So I like to say that because you have to get through that whole first year, that if you can have one okay moment, which is 60 seconds, sometime during your day, that's about as good as it gets. And so if we lower our expectations of ourselves, then sometimes it's, you know, it just takes that pressure off. But it's very difficult, and it does take a very long time. And much as grievers would like to wake up one day and be done with it, you know, it just doesn't work that way.
There are no rules, huh?
That's right. There are no rules in grief. People, people's grief patterns are as individual as their fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
And in a family, if, say, mom dies, dad has had a different relationship with mom, a spousal relationship, and then every sibling has had a different mother-son, mother-daughter relationship. And now after the death, everybody has their own path. So, you know, rarely are two people at the same place at the same time. So I think the gift that families can give each other is the space, just the space for people to be where they're at. And where you're at is where you're at.
So what factors influence grief?
Well, I find that I like the word complicated grief, because I think sometimes certain factors complicate the grief process. But I'm reluctant to use words like pathological grief or abnormal grief, because I think grief is grief, but certain things may complicate it. For example, the relationship with the person who died. If it was conflicted, if it was ambivalent, if it was highly dependent, then the person left may have time or may have trouble sort of adjusting. The mode of death, if the death was sudden and unexpected, then there often is a period of what I call being frozen, because it's too much to take in. You know, if somebody goes off to work in the morning and they're in a car accident and they don't come back, it's so hard to get a handle on that reality that the person has died and not coming back. Violent death, you know, if there's been murder or suicide involved, this may complicate the grief because you're dealing with violence as well. The griever's past coping behavior, you know, depending on how people cope with loss throughout their lives, will sort of impact on how they deal with loss. And the idea of social support, you know, some people can be surrounded by a lot of people but feel very alone. And so it's how they perceive whether they have, you know, support or not.
So everyone has their own path, as
you've
just said.
That's right.
How can we help a griever?
Well, I think one very good principle is to use our two ears and one mouth. So we listen more than we speak, because we can't fix a griever. And I think that that's, you know, if we can give up that notion of feeling that we have to fix somebody, then I think it frees us up to just be present. Because the best we can do is just accompany somebody. We can only walk beside them. We can't do it for them. We can't do it with them. We can just walk beside them. And so I think that if we can accept that, then I think it frees us up to just be present, give people their spaces, not judge them, just agree that there are no rules, and let people show us. I mean, I think if we are free to just be present, then we can let grievers lead us, and we can ask them, you know, what do you need? I find that very often when somebody's died, people will say, oh, just call me if you need anything. Well, grievers don't have the energy to make that call. And so it's not helpful to say, call me. It's better to say, I'm going shopping, give me a list, I'm taking some dry cleaning, let me take yours, here's a casserole, here are some muffins, you know, to do something very concrete for a griever.
You know, it's so hard to know what to say to the grieving person around what you've just said. So what words can we say? We run into someone in the pharmacy, for example, and they've just had a loss, and it's very uncomfortable. What do we say?
Yes, it is. And what I've learned from grievers is that they want acknowledgement. And when parents have had a child die, which, of course, is every parent's worst nightmare, I've heard mothers say they encounter people in the grocery store and they've changed aisles. You know, they have not been able to face them. But what grievers want is acknowledgement. And I think it's okay to say, I'm sorry to hear your mom died. How are you feeling today? Because if we just sort of said, how are you? You know, they may say, well, how do you think I am? My mother just died. but by saying, how are you feeling today, as opposed to yesterday or last week, it sort of puts the focus on how you're doing today. I think it's also helpful to say, you know, I have no words for you. And again, for example, when a child dies, it's every parent's worst nightmare, and it's very scary to everybody, and we don't know what it's like. I also have words not to say, and again, these are out at the mouths of grievers. People do not want to hear, I understand, I know how you feel, because nobody knows. And I think that if we can say, can you tell me what it's like? Can you tell me what it's like for you? How are you doing? Then we're putting the focus on, you know, other people instead of ourselves.
So it then becomes easier for us if we just be with the person and say something to acknowledge it, basically.
That's right, to acknowledge it and to say, you know, would you like to tell me the story? I find that people call me and want to join my groups because they want to talk about their person who died and nobody wants to listen. And so I think another thing is that when somebody special dies, you feel your world is out of control. You have no control over anything. So any way we can give back control to grievers, even by saying, would you like to tell me what happened? Would you like to tell me the story? Then they can say no if they want. I don't encounter that. I don't hear people saying, no, I don't want to. They want to talk, and nobody wants to listen. So another thing is always to say, you know, would you like to tell me what happened? If there was an accident, or if I'm giving a talk somewhere about grief and I ask the audience for questions, they always say, you know, isn't it better not to bring it up? But I've learned from grievers, and grievers tell me, you can't make a griever more upset than they already are. So if somebody special has died, you're thinking about them all day, every day anyway. So for somebody to acknowledge it helps to honor that person's memory rather than ignoring it, because then you don't know if they know, you know, it's too ambiguous. And so it's much better just to acknowledge it. You know, I'm sorry to hear so-and-so died. How are you doing today? You know, would you like to go for coffee? Would you like me to look after your kids for a couple of hours so you could go for a walk? You know, to do something really concrete is much more helpful for them. They don't have the energy to reach out.
Okay. How then, Dawn, can we help children around grieving?
Well, I think it's easier for children to be included in family grief than excluded. And I think that the two guiding principles should be tell children what to expect and give them a choice. And you see, children begin to have the adult perception of death, that it's final, it's universal, it's irreversible, which are, you know, quite big concepts, complex, about age 10 or 11, 12. And so under that, from 0 to 10, children are developing this notion that death is final, the person's not coming back. Children under 10 always want to be included. Young adolescents, you know, around 12, 13, they may not want to be included or go to the hospital or go to the funeral because they get it. They get the depths of sadness, and it may be too much for them, and they may say, no, I can't deal with that. But younger children, in my experience, always want to be included. And, you know, children don't have an innate fear of a dead body. And so kids are curious about life, they're curious about death. And so when kids are told what to expect and they are given a choice, they usually always want to be included. Another question I get is, you know, how do we tell a young child about death? And I use the three varies, that people die when they're very, very, very old, very, very, very sick, or very, very, very badly hurt. And Nana was very, very, very sick. The doctors tried to make her better, but her body stopped working and she died. And then in our family, you can say, you know, we believe she's our guardian angel, or she's with God or Jesus or whatever. But kids are very concrete, and it's easier for them to understand the fact that when we're dead, our bodies don't work, rather than Nana's in heaven and buried in the ground. You know, they get mixed up with the up in the air and down in the ground. So kids understand very sick, very hurt, or very old, and people's bodies stop working and they die.
So, Dawn, does grieving ever really end?
No, grieving doesn't end, but we adjust. And I think that one of the reasons it doesn't end is because all our lives we encounter what I call grief triggers. for example, the different senses, sight, sound, smell, touch. And if your person, for example, loved snow, well, the first time after they die, the first year, it's very excruciating, perhaps, to have that gentle snowfall that reminds you of your person who died and the fact that they're not here. And then as you go along in your grief, it becomes more bittersweet. At first, more bitter. Oh, bummer, you know, they're not here and they would love to, the snow. And then gradually, as you adjust, there becomes a sweetness to it. And it's, oh my, you know, Dad would have loved tonight because it's snowing. And, you know, there's a sweetness to the memory of it. And that's the way it is with everything. Whether your mom loved tulips and, you know, has died, at first excruciating to see them, and then eventually you adjust so that you can go and buy a big bouquet of tulips and enjoy them in your kitchen with a sweetness to it. But it doesn't mean that, you know, when you see those tulips 10 years after your mom died, you don't get a pang.
Mm.
And I think people say, you know, how do I know when I've adjusted? And I think that when you can enjoy the memories without the pain, when you can talk about your person, your eyes might fill up, but you're not sobbing. And, you know, you can really think more gently of the person who died rather than the excruciating pain that happens when they first die.
Dawn, thanks so much for talking to us today about grieving and loss. Again, Dawn's website is www.dawncruchet.com. We hope you've learned more about this important process. I'm Kelly Howarth, your host for Let's Talk Health. Thanks for listening and have a great day.